Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. You're listening to Career Crossroads, and if you're new here, welcome. If you're not new, welcome back. I'm Jonathan Colleton, and this is the podcast where I talk to one person each week about all the pivots they've made along their career path. Today, I'm chatting with Mike T, who tells me all about how he worked his way into the music industry as a writer and producer. But before we get to that today, I just gotta know, how you doing? You okay? I can't really remember a time in my life more where I feel like I needed to check up on other people. And I say that because I've needed people to check up on me quite recently. A lot, in fact. So I hope you're doing well. And if you're not, and you just need someone to vent to about life, you know, shoot me a message on the contact page at Career Crossroads Podcast or on Instagram. That works too, on the Instagram account. Because we have all had a very crazy year and a half. And while things are not back to normal yet, whatever normal means anymore, there does seem to be a bit less chaos right now. But still, no one's doing great, right? You might be okay, but you're not thriving, probably. A while ago, I read this really great article about how we're languishing. That's the term to kind of describe how you're not doing terrible. No one around you is on fire. So by all accounts, you should be fine, but you just feel kind of blah. That article made me feel a lot better about why I'm not as productive as I want to be, or why I don't really feel up to my usual hobbies like I used to. And it's also making me feel better about the fact that this is the second time I'm recording this intro because, ladies and gentlemen, for the first time in 44 episodes, I recorded over my intro or cut it funny. Anyway, point is, a clip was missing when I went to go stitch it together. So here we are, round two. And I guess I'm languishing. The article is by Adam Grant, by the way. I think it's just called Languishing. It's from the New York Times. Great article. Highly recommend it. The Languishing article, it's also making me feel better about the fact that I accidentally have done two episodes in a row where people are both involved in music. And normally, I'm pretty on top of that kind of stuff, and I try to make sure I don't put people with similar career paths too close to one another. But the good news is, Laura and Mike's career paths really aren't all that similar. Mike's been in the music industry continuously since he broke in, but as you're going to hear from him today, something happened that caused Mike to make a major pivot on how he approaches his career, how he works, and how he thinks. So I'm going to get to the interview right now, and after that conversation, we can talk a little bit about how we can learn from what Mike has been through in his career. Mike, welcome to Career Crossroads. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, man.
Man, this is the first in-person interview I've done in 7-8 months. So it feels good to be in the same room with somebody fully vaxxed up, yes. Comfortable, safe.
Absolutely.
And first interview I've ever done where someone else has been in the room as your lovely wife is here filming us right now. It's fantastic. Makes me feel like a real professional. So thank you for joining us, Monica. So, Mike, we're going to talk about your career path today, and there will come a point early on, I'm sure, in your story where our paths cross because we went to university together, as a number of people that I've spoken to have gone to Laurier with me. So let's start with you telling me about what you were like as a teenager. I always like to get a sense of where people grew up and what were their interests like when they were about 16 years old.
16? Specifically?
Yeah. Well, you know, anytime when you were a teenager, yeah. Like 16 is like one of those ages people just kind of hone in on, but
yeah,
give me whatever matters to you.
16 years old would have been like high school, mid, late high school, I guess. The best way to describe myself during that time period, and I know this now because I'm a little bit older and looking back, reevaluating and whatnot, I think back then, a lot of people would have thought, like, this kid's got it figured out, you know?
Yeah.
Really confident, whatever it may be. But looking back now, I think I was very much a very confused child in a number of different ways. I think as a high school student, just, you know, as a kid, I moved a lot, you know, location-wise. I grew up in a place called Rexdale in Toronto. Went to high school in Woodbridge. So going from more lower income area into a more, the opposite, basically, Woodbridge. And then also growing up in a Protestant church while going to Catholic high school. So it was somewhat of a interesting time because there was all these different things coming at me all at once growing up, different types of friends, different income areas, different religions for that matter, beliefs, faiths, ideology, philosophies. So as a kid, kind of seeing all this kind of stuff and interacting with so many different people, I think I came to a place where it was very difficult for me to understand what was for me, you know, mm-hmm. and what was my identity and what, you know, for the sake of this podcast, what I wanted to do for that matter.
Yeah.
You know?
So did you have any specific interests or hobbies that, or something you thought maybe you'd want to do long term? Or did you ever like see a movie and see a character and they had a job and you were like, I should do that when I'm older? I always wonder if what sort of things impact people's early visions of what they might do when they're older.
You know, I think when it came to this whole concept of like, okay, you know, when you grow up, you have the grown-ups kind of asking you, what do you want to be when you grow up, right?
Yeah.
I had no idea how to answer that question. Like, absolutely no idea. So on one hand, I wanted to answer in a way that made me a kind of good candidate for a good future.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Thinking about, you know, do I want to be a doctor? Do I want to be a lawyer? So on and so forth, right? And then there was the other side that was like, okay, well, like, business is a thing. Let's think about making money, right? Like, mm-hmm. how do I make more money? And then there was another part of me that also understood the beauty in thinking outside of the box. So as a kid growing up, I loved music. Music was just in my household. My dad played the classical guitar, so he was always playing guitar. I was heavily influenced by hip-hop, you know, growing up in Rexdale. I later on got exposed to more house music in the Woodbridge area. And just kind of like a lot of different, you know, Christian music, gospel music. Growing up in the church, my grandma would take me to church every Sunday. So music was a huge part of my upbringing. And mm-hmm. one thing that I will never forget is the feeling that I had when I was just listening to music, specifically when I heard my dad playing guitar. And so, you know, when it comes back to this whole ideology of like feeling like I didn't know myself or didn't understand how to, you know, decide what I wanted to do or wanted to be or who I even was for that matter, there was this sense of not belonging, you know, a sense of like, where do I fit in? How do I fit in? Where do I belong? Like, where should I be in the next couple of years? Where should I be when I grow up? Like, I hope I pick the right place, so on and so forth, right? And I just remember, you know, when I used to listen to my dad play guitar, the feeling that I had was this feeling of peace where all the anxiousness went away, all this worry of like, oh my gosh, am I going to screw up my future went away, all this anxiousness of how do I answer this question of what do I want to be when I grow up pretty much went away. So when I came at the end of high school, my only thinking was like, okay, I don't necessarily know what I'm going to be when I grow up, or however way you want to ask that question, right? What job you want to have, or even what I wanted to study for that matter. But I knew the feeling that I had when I listened to my dad play guitar, this peace, this feeling of like belonging, this feeling of like just like good, you know, that's what I wanted to replicate in my future. However way that looked like, I just wanted to replicate that because everything else just gave me anxiousness, just gave me, am I making the right decision? Do I really like this? Am I really good at this? Am I going to screw up my future? Am I going to make the wrong decision? You know?
Oh, I totally get all that because while I'm listening to what you're saying, as I'm hearing that, I'm thinking like, oh yeah, I know what it's like to feel those feelings because it just occurred to me, given that this is the first in-person podcast I've done in so long, I have to pay attention to the environment around me. And I just remembered there's a Christmas ornament up above us and your wife's taking pictures and filming this. So that is going to be an interesting thing to come out later in some of the footage. But yeah, so then in terms of like a next step, I was going to say practical next step, but that's some sort of assumption that things have to be practical. They don't. Yeah. At the end of high school, did you want to go to university out of your own choice? Or was it one of those things where your mm-hmm. parents or somebody else sort of nudged you in that direction? Or was it one of those things where you just thought like, that's the thing I'm supposed to do, right? So I'm going to go to school.
I would say a little bit of all of that, in all honesty. University wasn't really a thing I planned for or thought about a lot, in all honesty, you know? I think coming into high school, like I had mentioned, I went to a school called Holy Cross in Woodbridge, Ontario, Canada. And it was a different world from my elementary school. It was a different place, you know, where university and college wasn't necessarily a popular topic that went around, you know what I mean, growing up.
Yeah.
But yeah, when I went to Holy Cross, it was very evident how important this university thing was. We were hearing a lot about it. Career fairs were happening. University and college visits were happening. You know, our high school happened to be a big soccer high school. So there was scouts coming in for soccer teams and stuff like that. So it was a conversation that was very prominent. So it was very difficult to even get away from it. To add to that, my parents are immigrants from Indonesia. Were very young when they came here. And so as being one of the eldest cousins in the family, I have a huge family, by the way, but I was one of the older cousins. And so my whole family expected me to kind of be the first generation to ultimately graduate post-secondary, whether it be university, college. So in a lot of ways, I kind of had this responsibility on my shoulder to be kind of to open up the gates for the rest of my cousins to kind of come in and get their degrees and be successful and ultimately get to that Canadian dream, right? Mm-hmm. Story where we would kind of bring our family into this glorious kind of Canadian coming up, you know, story. So yeah, I think I very much was influenced by that, but also having that responsibility really pushed me to really look into it that much more deeper as well.
All right. So then Laurier, how did that come into the picture? Was that the first thing you did right after high school? Was Laurier your first stop?
No.
Oh, okay.
Not at all, actually. So like I mentioned, university was a no-brainer for me. Like my family all expected me to go into it. And so when it came to choosing what universities to go to, I initially thought I was going to stay in Toronto. The reason being was because I didn't know any other schools, in all honesty. Like
I get that.
I literally didn't know.
I get that. I grew up in Toronto too. And so I think like, how did I pick a bunch of schools outside of here to go to? Like, did I just blankly apply and then toured them and then realized, oh, this is cool out here? Like, I have no idea.
Yeah. So I mean, University of Toronto was a no-brainer. York was a no-brainer. It was down the street from me. Ryerson was another school that I ended up applying for as well. And then Laurier was kind of a last minute ball in the submission there, because what happened was I started talking to a couple of students who were actually at the school. So I had a couple of friends that were a little bit older than me who went to these different schools and had conversations with them. And I had a conversation with one of my friends, good friends at that time, Jono. Shout out to Jono if he's listening to this right now. But, and I, long story short, when I talked to all these students, there was this energy that Jono gave off as a Laurier student that just kind of brought this pride and this happiness and excitement when he talked about the school. And that really intrigued me because that was different. You know, it wasn't really something that I expected, nor was it. And it was cool, right? It was like, in my head, I'm like, how can a student talk about their school this, you know, excitingly and proudly for that matter? And so, you know, after that conversation, I ended up talking to my guidance counselor. The school ended up having, you know, a very good business program, which is what I applied to. And yeah, I went ahead and just kind of applied for it.
That is so fascinating, because so many times when I talk to people about the university they went to, it is so regularly that they chose it or were interested in it, not because of a certain program, but because of some sort of vibe, or people switch from one school to another because they go on a tour and they're like, wow, I like it here. And it's not ever the program, but then of course it's convenient that Laurier has a fantastic business program. So you move into Laurier in first year. That's where we meet, because we were in, it's sort of the same residence, but also not the same residence, because it was two buildings, but they were both so small that we were branded as the same.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Because like we had 36 people in our building, and I think you guys had like 40 or something like that, or 45. Yeah. It was small.
Yeah.
It was like 80 of us total. So we were one community in residence. Eiler Leupold had a great time there in first year. I mean, that was my experience, but for you, was the Laurier experience, I mean, early on, did it click right away and you felt like this is where I should be, the student life fit the way you wanted it to, the program fit the way you wanted it to, or was it different experience?
I wouldn't say that. Like, I think, I actually applied for the business program and I didn't get in. So I got an alternate offer for economics. And when I got into economics, there's the sell was that like you start with economics and kind of get into business afterwards, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, I ended up just kind of going with it blindly, actually. So unlike most people who would normally go tour the school or like find out more about it, I had never been to Waterloo. I didn't know the campus. I never took a tour. Just the fact that I had this one friend who went to this school was the only thing I had, essentially. And the fact that my guidance counselor was telling me, hey, like, it's a really cool vibe there, like, really cool community. It's a smaller university.
Yeah.
At that time, I think it was much smaller than what it is now. I don't even think Brandford was,
It was a thing, but it was not big at that time.
I think it was
time.
Like a building back then, probably. Brandford. But, so yeah, when I arrived, it was nice because it was a fresh start, you know, coming from a high school where, like I mentioned, I didn't feel like I really understood myself. I didn't really know where I fit in. I came into a place where I didn't know anybody. It's a new area. It's the first time I'm moving in, living on my own. Mm-hmm. I'm meeting new people, meeting you.
Yeah.
And it was a cool experience because, yeah, it's the first time that I was really able to kind of be independent and ultimately start defining myself for who I was, rather than, you know, taking in the environment of my family or my school friends or whatever, what have you, right?
Yeah.
So I really took it as I gotta figure out who I want to be now, you know?
Yeah.
And I think Laurier was such a cool place to do that, because like you mentioned, it is very much a community, and you have that kind of family energy and feeling when you're on campus, you know?
Yeah.
You often kind of have a lot of familiar faces. And for our residents, like you had mentioned, it was kind of a little tight-knit family of its own, right?
Mm-hmm. That's why we sat here for 45 minutes talking before we started recording, just reminiscing about all the people we've been in touch with or lost touch with over the years. I also have this image in my head now of if it was your parents that dropped you off, like showing up with printed MapQuest instructions, trying to get you to campus because no one had been there before. And this is like pre-phone GPSs,
exactly.
2007.
Exactly.
Because I imagine that's probably what happened for me as well.
So. Yeah. And to get... you know, greeted and welcomed by like this mob of people. I don't know if you remember. I think did like...
I do, because I was one of the people doing that years later.
Yes, yeah. Yes. They would come and literally help you move.
Yeah.
I remember my parents were ecstatic because they were already worried about how like, how are they going to move everything in on their own?
And then 30 screaming second through fifth years show up and
literally
pick up all your stuff and bring it into your room. And you're like, wait, what?
Yeah, it was cool.
Yeah.
It was definitely a nice first impression for sure when I got onto campus.
Yeah.
So
then beyond first year, as your time at Laurier went on, did you feel like, I mean, one, did you get into business? Did you transfer out from economics into business? And then did the academic side of things feel like it was leading you towards something that was very specific in terms of a career? Or was it one of those things where you just knew you were getting a good education that would lead to... it would give you the skills to one day have a successful career or something in the middle. It's not got to be one of the poles. It could be anywhere along the scale.
So like I mentioned, coming into university, I was very much going through like a rebrand of myself,
right.
You know? I was rediscovering myself in a number of different ways, starting to really understand what I liked, what I didn't like, what I wanted to do, what I didn't want to do. And in that first year, it was very quick for me to evidently see that, like, you know, I didn't belong in a suit in an office working a 9-to-5. That was very quick. And I felt that right off bat when I started going to classes and lectures and just going through the content and just thinking to myself, this is all makes sense, but why am I doing all this? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it got heightened when I started doing more extracurricular stuff on campus as well. Because what I started understanding and realizing is that this world is a lot larger than I had originally expected, you know?
Right.
I don't have to just study business. I don't just have to study economics or the common things that most students coming out of high school understand to be a possibility. There are a lot of other things that you could study on campus. There are a lot of other things that you could learn to become. And I think that's something that, well, at least back then, us as high school students weren't really told, you know?
Yeah.
I think you have the popular... you know, courses, like business is always a big one. It's almost like a catch-all. You have medicine, the sciences, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then off the top of your head, there's not really much else beyond that. Maybe engineering.
Right.
You know
the,
what
the
I mean?
The ones that like, lead to like very distinct direct careers.
Yeah. So beyond that, like you don't have a lot of conversation about, you know, the arts, for example. You know what I mean? Like,
I got a history, Canadian studies, double major, so I get you.
Yeah, or a teacher. That's usually another popular one, right?
Yeah.
So to answer your question, in terms of my program leading me towards a career, I wouldn't necessarily say that. What I was doing on campus, however, was a whole different story, I would say.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, that's what I figured. I mean, I think... there's probably a reason why there's certain people I still talk to more than others after my time at Laurier. And it's probably because we interacted outside of the class. We interacted while doing a bunch of different extracurricular activities, right? Yeah. And so, like, I know our paths cross over the years while you were involved in stuff and I was involved in stuff. So tell me about the things you were doing and the things that really mattered and kind of what you learned from them.
Yeah, coming into university, like I had mentioned, I had this feeling and love for music. You know, music was just like my thing. Like, I enjoyed listening to it. I enjoyed playing. I played the guitar. I just loved it. And that feeling that I had when I listened to music, that feeling of peace, that feeling of acceptance, I wanted to replicate that however way I could going into the future, right? And so I told myself, I'm going to do anything and everything that had to do with music as I'm going into this new university and this new world and starting to rebuild myself. So I literally did everything from DJing to promoting clubs to doing photo shoots for musicians on campus to open mic nights to, you know, the infamous story is that, like, in first year university, I went to a music store out here, Long and McQuaid's, and bought like a $100 USB mic. And I plugged it into my laptop and literally started recording artists on campus. And yeah, I literally tried it all. Like, until I think it was, I was doing dance as well, dance instructing for hip hop dance at the athletic complex. I was doing it all, you know, up until around third year, which is when things really started getting interesting. Because what happened was I had signed up for a competition online for the search for the next VJ, video jockey, for Much Music. And for those of you who don't know, Much Music is kind of, or was, the MTV of kind of Canada, basically. Yeah. And so I'd signed up to apply an audition to become the next VJ. I don't know if you remember this video.
I sort of remember it, but not specifically.
Yeah, it was a ridiculous video. Like, looking at it, I think my wife and I watched it not too long ago and we just died of laughter. But yeah, I made this, like, I think it was a 6-minute video, put it out on YouTube, and it basically blew up in a lot of ways. I think within the week, I ended up getting like 5,000, 10,000 views. And back then, social media wasn't really a thing.
Yeah.
So, like, nobody really understood the power of social media. Marketing and promo was still, you know, posters and flyers. And so it was a really big turning point, because what happened was I started walking around campus and random people were recognizing me. Not even just campus, like the city, like Waterloo. Mm-hmm. They would like wave me down and be like, "Hey, I saw your video. Like, it was hilarious. Hope you get it." You know, fast forward a couple months after that, I didn't get the VJ thing, but I had this newfound popularity. And that ended up leading to this music video thing that I ended up getting brought into by some people on campus to do a Golden Purple remix to Wiz Khalifa's song Black and Yellow. And we were just talking about this.
I remember that.
And we thought we were like the coolest people in the world doing this thing. And we shot this video, we recorded it in the studio, and we threw this big party. I think we even had the support of the school itself up until the video came out and there was like alcohol in the video and they didn't want to back it.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's a whole nother story.
Wasn't there people like on the roof of a house or something?
Exactly. Yeah,
they're
exactly.
Not big fans of them.
Yeah. So. Not the most safety precautions taken during that time period, I would say. But when that video came out, it got even more views. So we shot up to like 40,000 views or something like that. University blogs were putting it out. This was when blogs was still a thing.
Yeah.
You know, Tumblr was a thing. It was going like all over the place on Tumblr. And as this was happening, I started a Twitter account. My roommate at the time, D, she got me to start a Twitter account. And this was super early in the game, right? I ended up building up like 5,000 followers. And that 5,000 followers ended up, you know, little did I know, it ended up becoming kind of my ticket into a lot of different opportunities in the entertainment business. The first thing that it got me connected with was the Turret Nightclub. So the Turret Nightclub is a, I don't know if it's still around, but
no, I think it closed. Did it shut down? In the last couple of years? Yeah. It was a sad, sad day.
That's terrible. So the Turret Nightclub at the time, it was coming back that year. So this was the year, I think it had shut down for about 2 years. They were trying to bring it back and they were trying to rebrand. And one of the things that they were trying to do was find an MC to host the events. So kind of like a poster child, essentially, for the club. And with all the success and popularity that I was having, they ended up reaching out to me to be that guy. So the guy, you know, on the microphone, promoting the drink specials, shouting out people in the crowd. And I became even more popular on campus because they gave me a lot of free drink tickets on student nights. So everybody from you know, the nobodies to the football players were literally, you know, my best friends, essentially. And it spread. It actually spread from there because the Turret ended up getting their numbers starting going up. Clubs in the city started finding out about Golden Purple and the success we had on YouTube. And they were hiring us on board to host events in their places as well. So I was literally making a living as a university student going to these clubs and getting paid to basically speak on the mic. It was pretty incredible.
Yeah, tough, tough life. Jeez, I don't know how you even got through, right?
It was pretty incredible.
Yeah.
I must say, it was, I met a lot of different people. I got free drinks, you know, every Saturday, and I was getting paid for it. It wasn't a lot of money. Like, I probably was getting like maybe $100, $200 a night, but during that time,
oh man.
And I wasn't paying for drinks. What other expenses are there, right?
Yeah. No, that's, see, you had it all figured out in university. It sounds pretty good, right?
At the time.
At the time, right. Okay, so then balancing that with like the academic side of things, because, you know, the goal is typically to graduate, get the degree, and then you can go on and do, if not something with the degree, at least you've then got that degree, right? So for you, were you focused on finishing up the academic side, or was that just sort of there while you were doing all of this other stuff?
Yeah, so we haven't talked too much about the academics, but like I had mentioned, I didn't get into business and I was studying economics that first year. But it was very quickly that I found out that, you know, business economics wasn't, I just didn't like it, in all honesty. Like, I just felt, I don't know, I didn't feel like I was in the right place. At the same time, I realized the importance of understanding business as a whole. And so I actually kept the business side of things and continued studying it, but also started studying philosophy.
Philosophy?
Yeah.
Interesting.
And so throughout university, it was kind of these two different ways of thinking where I would, you know, have my hard skills that I was studying in business and I would have to, you know, turn around and start talking about physics, you know, an hour later type of deal. So it was a very cool time for me because it really kind of stretched my brain and my way of thinking and my perspective in so many different ways, right? And in a lot of ways, I think it really put me in a place to, it allowed me to really think outside of the box in terms of possibilities and opportunities for that matter.
Yeah. Okay. So as you get towards the latter part of university, obviously music and all of these things you were talking about are a huge part of your life.
Yeah.
And was the goal to get into that profession and make a living doing that? Or were you not even worried about that? Were you just like living your life and loving it and not worried about what tomorrow or a year from now is going to bring?
I was still confused, man.
You know, this is funny just because it seems like as you're telling the story now, it seems like you know exactly what you wanted to do. But isn't that all just hindsight, right? Like you can look back now and you can say, I was doing all these things that led to where I am now. But when you think about how you felt at the moment, none of it, you couldn't piece it all together.
No, not at all. honestly, I was going with wherever the waters took me, you know, whatever yeah. opportunities popped up, right? From the whole MTV Much Music audition thing and the popularity on that, and then the popularity on social media, the popularity and the success I had with Gold and Purple and that video, that led me to a group on campus called the A-Team. And the A-Team is where I really started experience getting my fair share of connecting with the actual music industry, the entertainment industry. And the A-Team, for those of you who obviously didn't go to Laurier, is basically a group of students on campus who ultimately plan out and execute all the student events, including concerts, on-campus parties, you know, a bunch of student events that we would run year-round. So I think it's a whole rigorous process to apply. I was one of, I think, 8 people who got on it. So it was cool in a lot of different ways, right? And so I did that for 2 years and had a chance to actually start connecting with a lot of cool artists. So I had a chance to meet guys like Carnell Official, Classified. And beyond that, I was meeting managers too, other program, you know, student programming directors and A&Rs, label people. So it was a very cool look and discovery that I had as I was going through this process. And to answer your question, each thing kind of led to the next thing without knowing what the next thing was going to be, you know? Like you mentioned, you know, looking back now, everything kind of like pieced together. But back then I was like, I have no idea. Like, Jesus, take the wheel, basically. Yeah, you know yeah, what I mean? Yeah. Like I hope this actually leads to something that actually allows me to get paid and pay my bills, you know?
Yeah. So then when you graduate, I always think about this. The day after you graduate, what are you doing? Or the day after you finish classes, are you then looking for just sort of a summer job just because you got other plans, you're going to take some time and relax? Some people go and travel, so they don't want permanent jobs. Some people, like I did that, but I thought I would be able to get a job when I came back. Not as easy. Took me a little bit of time. So what were you doing, though, the day after? Are you go back home, or are you find your own place, and now you're going to do what?
So I knew deep down inside I wanted to be around music. But at the same time, I knew deep down inside also, you know, everybody was telling me it's extremely difficult to get into the music industry, right? Like, it's near impossible. Make sure you have a plan B, so on and so forth. And so when I was coming out of university, I didn't know how to get into the music industry. So the best thing that I knew and understood to kind of get to a place where I knew where I was going was more schooling. And so I ended up applying for a post-grad program for public relations and corporate communications at Centennial College. And lucky for me, well, I don't know about lucky for me, but the program didn't start until January the next year.
So like 8 months, 8 month gap or so.
So I had this 8 month time period that I needed to fill up. And a job popped up, a university liaison job popped up. And one of my roommates, who was a ambassador, so she used to give tours on campus and stuff, was like, hey, like, I know you were looking for a summer job until you're back in school. Why don't you apply for this thing, right? And honestly, I just kind of applied blindly. I didn't know what to expect. In a lot of ways, I didn't even know what the job entailed. I just knew that there was a lot of traveling involved, expenses were getting paid, and it was perfect timing to lead into my next stage of schooling. And, you know, I ended up getting the job and pretty much traveled Ontario. My job essentially entailed traveling Ontario, giving presentations about Laurier to high school students. And to this day, I would say it was probably the best job I've ever had in my life.
High praise.
Yeah.
And as we were talking about beforehand, you worked at that very same job with Carissa, who was my first ever interview on this podcast, 40, 2 episodes ago. So yeah. Small world, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I ended up meeting a lot of different people because I was working it. I think I did 3 years in a row. It was.
Oh, wow.
So the job itself was only 8 months, right?
Yeah.
So I ended up just reapplying. Well, the first year I went through it and I was like, okay, like, this is my goodbye from Laurier. You know, I just spent an additional 8 months. It's time for me to say goodbye. So I went through the schooling and corporate communications. I hit the summer and then Laurier contacted me again saying like, hey, look, like, there's an open position here. I know you're going through schooling. I know you have a placement that you're looking for. We could be your placement.
Oh, I wondered when you just said like by the time you got to the summer, I'm like, that's not a lot of school, but the placement, no,
so
of course.
Yeah. The post-grad was only 8 months.
Oh, wow.
So it was short.
4 months school, 4 month co-op?
4 months school,
or,
4 months.
Or placement, whatever placement, you want to call it.
Yeah. Exactly. And so when I was looking for a placement, Laurier contacted me and was like, look, like, we want to offer you this opportunity. Well, they were literally putting together a position for me, basically, where I was able to work with the marketing department while still doing recruitment because they wanted me to recruit.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I left a pretty good impression as a presenter, and I was lucky enough to stay in touch with a couple of the managers, and they brought me back for another year and ended up actually like just kind of sticking around for a number of different contracts for that full year after that.
Yeah.
And during this time period, I was pursuing music.
I was just going to ask that. Yeah. So knowing that this is now like music, you know, sometimes we talk about people have jobs. Sometimes they have careers. This feels very much like you have a passion and you're working towards it. You knew what you want to do and you knew you had to do some additional work to give yourself the best chance to succeed because, as you said, people were telling you it was going to be difficult. So you go and set yourself up by getting this extra education and then you get full-time work while you're building up your side business of sorts so that you can eventually transition it into full-time. And that makes sense. That is the way that it's the way to do it that I think makes sense. I mean, my opinion is not worth all that much maybe, but I understand what you're like. Maybe that's one of those things where we look back on now and it's like, what a great decision. At the time, was that how you felt? Was that what you felt you were doing? Or was it just another like day by day, take it day by day?
And oh, yeah.
You were getting offered jobs, so you just kept doing music on the side.
I didn't know what the hell I was doing.
Oh, there you go.
I did not know what I was doing.
I'm just imposing my vision of what happened on your story.
I wish I could say I knew what I was doing, but I had no freaking idea, man.
Yeah.
And it was... Like I said, all I knew was that I loved music. That's really all I knew. And I didn't get any practical steps in pursuing music. And so I grabbed on to whatever practical things were around me. Schooling is practical.
Yeah.
Getting a job with the university is practical, right? That was just the practical things that were closest to me because the route that I wanted to take made absolutely no sense. Like, what do you do, right? There's no, at that time at least, there was no programs out there for music business. There was no textbook. There was no, like, there was no manual to tell me what to do next, you know? Right. And so, like I said, I just kind of grabbed onto whatever I could. And during this time period, I started going to a studio to just record music. So I was, you know, working 9 to 5, Monday to Fridays, traveling for Laurier, and then on the weekends hitting up a studio to record music, write music, just make music. And that was pretty much my life coming out of university.
Okay. So how long did it go that way before something changed? Like at the end of those 3 years of working as an ambassador, whatever the job title was, at the end of 3 years of doing that, like what stopped you from going back? Or
halfway through my Laurier terms, I ended up connecting with somebody who at that time signed me on board as a writer. So it was my first quote-unquote music deal, basically. And I was getting signed on board as a writer. I was ecstatic, you know, like I wasn't making any money or anything like that, but I had a manager. I had somebody dealing with my business and figuring things out, or at least helping me to push my career forward, you know? And, you know, what ended up happening is that same manager ended up going down south to Miami and started connecting with some pretty big people. One of those people being Pharrell. And at this point in time, Pharrell was actually working on a new album. He just came back from Europe. I think he just wrote a book or something like that. And the label wanted him to write a new album. And so he was hiring, he was taking submissions in for writers and producers and engineers to basically start building this new project up. And so I had an opportunity to actually submit a bunch of my work to get placed into that project called Girl. And yeah, I'll never forget it. I was literally working my butt off, just kind of making music, trying to get on this album. And it kind of snowballed from there, in all honesty. From Pharrell, we started connecting with Flo Rida's camp. Flo Rida ended up linking us with Cash Money Records, and just kind of kept going from there. And the funny thing is, and this is the thing that I often try my best to kind of highlight, is that during this time period, I was still working for Laurier.
Really?
Yeah. So, you know, after Laurier, I started working for a marketing company as well. But during these, my last year at Laurier and my 1 year working at this one marketing firm I ended up working with, to answer your question about why I left Laurier, by the way, is because they were only offering me contracts.
Right.
So in the back of my head, I was like, you know what? Like, I don't know how much longer I could stay in Waterloo because I'm driving so much now. I'm going to so many different places. At this point, I'm flying down to Miami too sometimes to get some music work done. I need something that's more in the city, closer to the airport, that allows me to have a little bit more sleep. Because yep. I wasn't sleeping a lot either, just because with the commute being about an hour, you know, it was tough. And by the end of it, I was working out of Brantford. So it would have been an hour and a half to 2 hour drive from Toronto, you know? So like I said, as I'm coming into studios, working on Pharrell submissions, working on Flo Rida submissions, I'm still working a 9-to-5 Monday to Friday. So for about 2 years, my life pretty much comprised of Monday to Friday, I would work, come into work at 9 o'clock. Fridays, I would come in a little bit earlier. So I'd be able to leave around 4 p.m., 3, 4 p.m. I would pack a bag beforehand, take that bag to the airport after work, drive to the airport, hop on a plane to Miami, get into the studio, work from Friday night all the way to Monday mornings at around 2 a.m. and take the first red eye back to Toronto to catch my 9 a.m. shift to start on the Monday all over again. And I pretty much did this for 2 years straight.
Man, that is, you know, that same burn in the candle at both ends. That is like the ultimate burn on both ends.
Yeah.
That's it was intense.
It was a crazy time in my life because, you know, on one hand, all these cool things were happening where I was traveling for music, I was making music, but I wasn't making any money.
That's the question. It's like the awkward question I need to bring up in these interviews sometimes, that like, what really is a career, right?
Yeah.
You can be happy doing something, but if you can't make a living off of it, is that really a career? And I don't have the answer to that, but it's very obvious that you wanted to be able to make money doing music and then be able to do it full time, because I'm sure there was probably a point in time where you were doing that and you just felt like such a badass that it didn't matter.
Exactly.
Like, you didn't care. You were like, this is too cool. Like I can't complain about this, but at some point that's got to shift, right? Like after 2 years of doing that, you've really got to be, I can only imagine.
100%. 100%. It was, yeah, I mean, the hopes was that I was going to, I don't know, sign some sort of deal that allowed me to ultimately quit my 9-to-5, you know?
Yeah.
And this was kind of the difficult part to grasp, because during this time, I was becoming very distant from my friends and my family, because I was missing weddings, I was missing baby showers, I was not around, you know. I was traveling a lot, and when I'm in town, I'm working my 9-to-5, essentially, or trying to sleep, essentially, right? And so a lot of my friends, a lot of people that were seeing me on social media were thinking, oh, like, Mike's really got it set up, and no, I didn't. You know what I mean?
And that's the evils of social media, right?
Yeah.
Like, people are only seeing the good side of things, because you're not posting. If you post a picture that's like red eye back to Toronto at 3 a.m., people are like, oh, how cool is
that?
And you're
exactly.
Like, no, I'm goddamn tired. Like, I can't keep doing this.
Exactly, exactly. And that, again, went on for 2 years until about 2015. So again, this is about 5 years of just grinding it out. I finally got a situation that allowed me to actually settle in a little bit. I started working for a company called Cash Money Records and working on writing. So I was doing ghostwriting and production work for this label that allowed me to start making money. And so that ended up kind of snowballing into more executive work. But during that time in 2015, I was burnt out. Like, I was mentally not in the right place. I was personally drifting away from my family and my friends. I had a lot of people around me that I just didn't realize were really there for me and loved me for me, for that matter, and cared for me, you know. And I was a mess, you know, and it was difficult for me to grasp, because to the world and to my friends and people who were watching me on social media and maybe even like colleagues from Laurier and stuff like that, you know, to them, even my old bosses at Laurier, they're like, Mike's made it. Like, he's around celebrities and he's traveling and this, that, and the fourth. And for me, I was just like, my brain kind of checked out in a lot of ways. Like, I needed a break. And so in fall of 2015, I went to a kind of like couple buddies university buddies were hanging out. And two of my homies were planning a trip to Colombia, like a backpacking trip in about a week, I think it was, or 2 weeks or something like that. And when I was chatting with them, I'm like, and this was fresh off of like, okay, I finally have some sort of stability in music, like I'm making some money. And I basically ended up saying, like, I'm gonna come with you guys, like, screw it, like, I'm gonna leave for a bit. Like, I think it was 3 weeks I was gone for, 3-4 weeks. I had not taken a break for the past like 5 years of my life, basically. I went from school to work to music situation after music situation, and I had not taken a break. And so 2015, I went on this trip to Colombia, and this is really just kind of where my mind kind of shifted a little bit. I started realizing and feeling this emptiness that I had in being in a life that I had built that I didn't necessarily was 100% happy with. And I say that because I had given up so many relationships and friendships and drifting apart from my parents, and I was missing a lot of life, you know, events and in close people's lives, that I was almost on this island on my own, creating something that I thought I loved so much and I wanted so badly, that I ended up creating this lifestyle that did not really give me that feeling that I was searching for, which is that feeling of listening to my dad play guitar, that peace, that lack of anxiety, right? That feeling of like belonging, feeling that I was in the right place. I never felt that. And I questioned that hugely. And the reason why Colombia was a big game changer was that, A, it was a breather from my reality at that time, which is traveling and being around so many people and so on and so forth. And I had a chance to be by myself, you know. And B, I met my wife.
I knew it was coming. I knew it was coming.
Yeah. So the best way to put it, so when I first met her, you know, the number one thing I was trying to do was ultimately trying to impress her, right? I was trying to woo her, as you will.
Yeah.
And I was pulling all the stops. I was like, you know, I'm in music. I know this person, that person. I dropped Lil Wayne in there. I dropped Bieber in there. And she just did not give a crap. She did not care. And, you know, I don't know even know if she knows this, but that was my first feeling of like, wow, like, you know, somebody doesn't care about those things, you know? And I think what had happened was over the past couple of years, I had built up this circle of people around me that were there because of my accolades and not there because of me, you know? And so that really encouraged me to ultimately dig deeper as to what I really wanted for myself and really started understanding what I wanted and what I didn't want. And that wasn't a very easy question to answer, by the way, because I would say I still went on to do the music thing for another, you know, 4 or 5 years before I started really understanding. It wasn't until this past year where I really got into this new transformative understanding of what I wanted for my future, which is to be happy and at peace.
Okay, so I have so many things to say from that. So one, Monica, you changed him. You changed him big time. And the other thing is, so like you just said, for 4 to 5 years, you kept doing the music thing. And not that you're not doing it now, but you did it the way you were doing it, it sounds like. Even though you knew that that wasn't the way you wanted things to be anymore. And so I want to go back to what you were saying before about after university, when you were just going from this job to the next job because they offered you a job. And did you just continue to do it? Because at that point, you were now in the industry and it was now practical to keep doing what you were doing, even if it didn't feel like what you really wanted long term.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was like, you know, by the time I was doing stuff overseas and stuff, I became the music guy, you know? I became the hip-hop dude, the guy that can party on a Tuesday and still be working, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That could hang out with celebrities, that can, you know, be traveling for work. Like, I was that cool dude at weddings that people talked about, right? Like, you know, people would be telling me about how, you know, they just got a raise at their accounting firm. And I would be telling them like, oh, like I was at a party with Chris Brown 2 days ago. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that was the type of conversations I was having. And I think in a lot of ways, people hearing that and kind of feeding my ego and my pride pushed me and encouraged me and told me, okay, like this is the right way to go. This is what I need to do. I have to be the music guy. I have to drink on a Tuesday. I have to start partying. I have to hang out with these celebrities. I have to hate the office life. I have to, like, you know, not have a wife, not have kids. I have to, you know, be the music guy, you know, like the stereotypical music guy.
Like a character in Entourage.
Exactly. You gotta be that guy. Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's so funny because I'd go to weddings and people are like, you are a character from Entourage, essentially, right? And I felt the need to take on that image, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I totally believe that I was just kind of going with the flow and where people around me and the world or life was pushing me towards, essentially.
Okay, so after 4 or 5 years, what's the ultimate push then? What's the thing that finally makes you make a change?
Yeah.
And is it one thing, or is it just something building up for so long that you finally realize, like, you now know what you need to do?
Right. So this empty feeling that I had was going on between 2012 all the way up to last year, so 2020. So we're talking about many, many years of just feeling like I'm not in the right place.
Man, you're right? The second person I've talked to in a row who has a story like that. I wonder if older generations, people felt like this and just didn't talk about it, or if we as a generation have just been, I don't know, if we've sort of figured out that like we don't have to, we can eventually talk about that and we don't have to just play the part forever. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. You're totally right. But
I got you off track. You 2020, things changed for you.
Yeah. So 2015 was really the first instance where I started actually identifying this feeling of emptiness. But I would say that feeling of emptiness was even before that, you know? But when 2015 hit, I met the love of my life. And she ultimately showed me that it's not about the accolades, right? It's not about being the music guy. And, you know, I didn't get it right off jump. But when I met her, I started realizing there's a lot more to it than just these accolades that I was achieving, you know, this identity that I was playing off. And so years passed, we started dating, we ended up getting married, all things that the music guy should not be doing. You know what I mean?
Rebelling against your character arc.
Yeah, in a lot of ways. And I was confused. I was getting more confused. I knew I was feeling good about the fact that I was starting to have people around me that loved me, but I didn't quite understand how to switch this feeling of emptiness around. And then in 2020, I ended up going to therapy for the first time. Not like expectedly. I actually was suggested to go to therapy because my other entrepreneur friend, JP, suggested to just go in for a session and just try it out. In music, a majority of the work that you're doing is very entrepreneurial, right? You're relying on yourself to motivate yourself. You're relying on yourself to grind it out. There's nobody telling you what to do, what not to do. You're ultimately your own boss, right? And so my other entrepreneur friend suggested therapy. At the time, I was like, I don't really know if I need it, right? Like, I don't have a bad life, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like everybody's telling me I'm successful and I feel like I should be happy, you know? Everything seems pretty right. But you know what? Like, I'll try it out. And I did a couple of sessions, consultations with some therapists, and I absolutely hated it. Absolutely hated it. A lot of them were just kind of like digging into my past, and I was just like, I'm not really for this. A lot of them were just kind of like, how do you feel? You know, like very unpractical stuff. This is not to say therapy as a whole is terrible, but like the specific therapist that I was going to just wasn't really hitting the spot. And it wasn't until at the end of 2019 where I met my current therapist, who was also doubled as a life coach. And so the difference with him and a lot of the other therapists were that he was kind of bringing in some practicality to it. And when we were talking and going through sessions, I was loving it. I enjoyed the fact that I was talking about things that I didn't even know I needed to talk about, right? And finally, we got to a place where he started questioning why I was doing what I was doing in my life, specifically my career. Like why do you party on a Tuesday? Why do you travel so much? Like, why do you lose so much sleep? Why are you missing so many weddings? He was asking all these questions. I was like, I didn't know how to answer him. And that was when it hit me. That was when I was like, I realized that I had been so wrapped up in the grind and chasing something that I totally forgot what I was actually chasing, you know? And I take it back to, you know, 14 years old when I told myself, like, I feel really good listening to my dad play guitar. That was the feeling I was chasing. But in chasing that, I was building a life that was actually the opposite, giving me a lot of anxiety, giving me a lot of feelings of not belonging, giving me a lot of feelings of, like, not having people I love around me. And my therapist, Steven, really kind of made me realize that I lost track of my vision, right? What I wanted from the very beginning. And so at that point in time, I started reevaluating my life, man, my career, my business. And I ended up cutting off a lot of people in my life, leaving a lot of situations behind. And this past year, I ended up starting a new company called MT Education. And basically what we are is we're an artist development company that works with different labels as well as independent artists to help them create and strategize a legitimate business for themselves that can last the test of time. And so, yeah, like it's been a crazy pandemic, in all honesty. A lot of redefining myself, refining myself. And it really did just kind of come back to realizing and understanding that, you know, during these 10 to 15 years of high school into university, into the workforce, I didn't really take the time to ask myself who I was, what I wanted, and what I liked, what I didn't like. And instead, I was kind of going with the flow of what was coming my way, taking what I could get, and listening to everybody else as to what I should be doing rather than understanding what I want to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the point is, you know, bringing it back to the podcast, which is Career Crossroads, I think that is something that I don't know if kids talk about it, students talk about it now, or teachers talk about it now, but the importance of understanding yourself enough to be confident in what you want and to be confident in what you like and what you don't like is so important. And I don't believe I took the time necessary to do that in order to be able to create a life and create a future that I really enjoyed and was at peace in my heart about, you know?
Man, that it sounds like you've really put a lot of thought and effort into figuring out what you want out of a career. I mean, this is what I struggle with sometimes when people say something so perfectly, like, how can I even restate it? And I shouldn't even try, right? I'm just going to, I almost want to end it there, but I want to know for sure, like, is this now what you're doing full-time, day-to-day? That is your career. You've got your company now and you're helping the next generation of musicians.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I should say when I had my situation in 2015, my first label situation, I did quit my job. So I had been full-time music since 2015.
Yeah. I know. I knew that. But with the new company, like that's you doing the thing that you wanted to do, because
this is the new thing.
You and me talked that we're now in July, but we talked in December, I think of last year when we first got in touch about you coming on this podcast at some point. And you had said, like, you were like, I'm working on something. Yeah. I want to wait until the new year. And then we talked again in February. And then I don't know how it's been so long that now we're here. We are.
It's been a full year, eh?
Almost. I mean, well, it was December last year, but then February of this year we talked
about.
And I think you weren't quite ready yet, but now you're there. Exactly. You're doing the thing that you told me you were going to be doing. And, you sound thrilled about it, so I'm really happy.
You know what? I think the first time we got in touch was this summer, though, because I do remember this, actually, because I had commented on one of your posts because I saw you post something about the podcast on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
I think you were just starting up.
Yeah, it was last September.
And I was like, well, hey, if you need a music guy, like, I'd love to talk about my progress. And at that point in time, I was still doing a lot of label stuff.
Mm.
And so I think you had told me, like, yeah, let's definitely reconnect in the fall and kind of go from there. When we reconnected in the fall, that's when my life got flipped upside down.
Yeah.
So when you were like, hey, let's set up an interview, I was like, man, like, I actually just left my life behind. So right. I might need a little bit of time to rebuild here.
Which is perfect, man. Because so, I want to talk to the people who've rebuilt, who've taken something and realized, for whatever reason, there's a whole variety of reasons, but the thing they were doing isn't the thing they want to keep doing. And it's funny because so often, I think when I frame this podcast to other people, when I frame this episode, it's music most of the way, but we're talking about like two totally different mindsets.
Yeah.
And the way that you approached your career then versus how you approach it now is totally different. So it's not that you changed industries. You're still doing, in some ways, much of the same things you were doing, but you're doing them in a totally different way. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, in all honesty, a lot of the things that I'm doing now is similar, if not the exact same thing.
Yeah, but you're a lot happier about it.
Lot happier because my approach is so much different, right? My vision is so much different. My mission is so much different. My why is so much different, you know? And there's a level of confidence that comes into play when you start realizing and understanding that you're in a place where that you've created, right? That you've truly understood to be, you know, a place that you've built, a future that you've built for yourself. And again, that's why it's so important to me that, you know, students coming up, and I'm very big on, you know, helping out and mentoring young artists and young music people to get into this game. And the number one thing I always tell artists, like before even thinking about the technicalities of what school to go to or what do you want to be when you grow up, ask the question of, you know, who are you? Like, what do you like? What do you want? Right. And in addition to that, start talking to different people who actually love you and care about you and that know you best in order for you to start devising this image of a future that you'd be happy with. And that's really what I did. I had a wife that ultimately taught me how to love and be loved and love myself for that matter. And that's ultimately the thing that led me to being able to confidently build a life and a future for myself that not necessarily was the image of a music guy, right? But it was a future that I was happy with. And that's why, bringing it back to the Laurier days, the possibilities are endless, man. Like, this world is so crazy. We have, like, if you really think about it, we have 13-year-old social media influencers becoming millionaires on Instagram these days. And if that doesn't show you what the possibilities are, you know, in the next, you know, 5 to 10, 20 years, it's got to push you to push your limits, you know, and really create a life that is possible for you, you know?
Fantastic. So if there's any young artists out there that want to get involved in what your company is doing, where can they find you?
Yeah, I'm on social media. So it's Mike T. So ITSMICTEE on all platforms, Instagram. Feel free to go mteducation.com as well. That's EMTEE education.com.
Perfect.
And definitely connect. I'm always looking for new artists to connect with. So definitely hit me up.
Perfect. And links to all the websites, social media accounts will be in the show notes. So go to careercrossroadspodcast.com for that. Mike, thanks so much for telling your story today, man. It was, I mean, on the one hand, it's great to catch up, but it's really nice when the people who I get to catch up with also have something really valuable to bring to the podcast. So I appreciate it.
I hope it.
It
was valuable.
Oh, absolutely valuable. Absolutely valuable, man. Thanks again.
No problem, man. Thanks.
All right, that is Mike's career path so far. Before we get into some of the lessons of this episode, I do want to take a minute and acknowledge Mike's buddy Jono, who convinced him to go to Laurier, because I think it's hilarious that Mike talked about how hyped up Jono was and how excited he seemed when he talked about Laurier with such energy that it convinced Mike to go there. And that's so funny because Mike is the ultimate hype man for Laurier, so much so that he got hired time and time again to be a recruiter for them. So Mike, some people are probably going to be thanking you for the way that you talked about Laurier with such passion and energy that it probably made them go there. Now, when I was editing Mike's episode and I was thinking about what he said and how I can take something out of what he said and apply it to, one, my own life, but two, try and offer it as something that somebody else can apply to their own, it occurred to me that Mike's a really good example of how, even if you lose sight of why you've started a career, that doesn't mean that you're at the end of the road and you need to move on. You might be in a place of burnout or unhappiness or both, but you can still course correct. And if there's solid reasons for you got into that career in the first place, you just need to remember what they were and think about how to center what you do in the future in those original reasons or feelings. Think back to early in the interview when Mike talked about his musical influences, and he mentioned house music and hip-hop from where he grew up and gospel music from church. But the thing that he really touched on, and he brought it up again later on, was his dad playing classical guitar around the house. And he specifically said that he got this feeling of calm and this feeling of being at peace when he listened to his dad, and that was the thing that really made him want to work in music. The reason why he got into the industry didn't change, but he maybe forgot about it for a while. And to be fair, can you even blame Mike for that? The reason we watch shows like Entourage is because we think that's such an interesting lifestyle that we want to emulate, and Mike was living it. Like he said, he was the talk of parties, people were interested in what he was doing, and he admitted that that fed his ego, and it made him think what he was doing was the right thing to do. But ultimately, burnout rears its ugly head, as it does for so many people, and Mike starts to realize that he doesn't have that feeling of peace and calm anymore. It's gone. There's the first realization. The second realization comes when he meets his wife, Monica, and she's not impressed by his fancy Entourage lifestyle, and that helped him realize that what he thought he wanted maybe wasn't as important. It was just because he was the music guy, and it was not why he got into the industry. He didn't get in to be the music guy. He got in because of how happy it made him feel. Even then, with the realizations of those two things, it still took Mike 4 or 5 years before he was ready to make a change and do something that would really get him back to the place he wanted to be. By that point, with all the skills that he'd obtained over the years, he was able to branch out and he started his own company, and now he can do things his way on his terms. He can go back to making music the way that makes him feel that peacefulness, that calmness that got him into the field in the first place. So how do we take this story from Mike and this lesson from Mike and actually apply it in our own lives in some way? I think if you find yourself losing passion for the career that you chose, for the field of work that you're in, maybe the answer is you need a different field of work. But maybe, like Mike, you just have to remember why you got into that career in the first place and figure out a way to do things that will make you have that feeling on a day-to-day basis. Is that going to be easy? No, probably not. Took Mike 4 or 5 years and getting a therapist who's also a life coach to help him figure that out. But the important thing to note is it's possible. That's certainly something that I think is going to help me in the future, and I hope it can help you too. I'm going to leave it there for today, so go check out Mike's social media accounts, which are listed in the show notes, and get in touch with him if you're an aspiring artist looking for some guidance. If you know someone who would be interested in Mike's career path, please share this episode with them. And if you want to hear more stories like this, go to careercrossroadspodcast.com or follow the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any other podcast player. If you like what you hear, please leave the show a 5-star review.